Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call regarding the half-year results 2021 of SNP SE. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by the zero on your telephone for an operator assistance. May I now hand over to Mr. Marx, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, operator. Hello, everybody, and a warm welcome also from my side to our conference call on the half-year results 2021. I hope you all had the chance to see the information we published this morning, which is basically the full interim report for the first half year, plus the corresponding press release. In this call, we want to give you some more insights into our numbers and into the overall business trends. For that purpose, we have, as you are used to, prepared a presentation, which is also be found on our website in the section Investor Relations. To have the presentation and the speakers, usually now also in this call, our CFO, Heiner Dieffenbach, and our CEO, Michael Eberhardt, to guide you through the presentation, and that will be followed by a Q&A session where you can ask questions that you might have. I would say with that being said, Michael, I would like to hand over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Christoph, and also welcome from my side to this analyst conference. So I directly jump to page number 3, which gives you an overview about the main topics. Our first half year of 2021 was, I think, a very mixed one. We had some very good upsides, but also some things where we still need to improve. Let me start on the revenue side. In the first half year, our revenue in total improved by 10%, which is partially also by the acquisition of the Hexa AG, but also organically we grow by 5%. And this was, let's say, a weak Q1, but a very good Q2, and I think we see a better second half year as well. So the software revenue went up by 24%, and also the service revenue is, increasing. But we still have a lack of very big projects. What we normally have, that we have at least one, two very big S4 projects in the organization. Today we have a lot of, good projects around the world, but the one big shot, which is a 10 million, 50 million service business, is not in our organization right now. We reduced our loss in the first half year to minus 1.1 million, which was a big minus in Q1, and then some recovery on Q2, which is the trend is good, and we see further improvements going forward. Group order entry was, different. We had, besides US and UKE, we had a solid order entry across all markets, specific in Eastern Europe and in JPEG, but also in CEU. And then we had some slippages of verbally agreed deals, which just took more time to get them administrated, either with a big partner like IBM or also with a big automotive supplier, where we had the oral commitment, but at the end we did not receive the signed document just in time. Our order backlog is up by 29%, which gives you a good base for the further growth in our H2. And at the end, our guidance for 2021 will be confirmed, and we have later on we will talk about some updates of other effects driven by M&As, but this will be, all supporting our strategy and what we have committed to you going forward. If we go to page number 4, here you see the different distributions in the regions and also the mix of software and service across the regions. You know, so you see our Central Europe business is still doing good with a growth of 16%. So it's a real solid business in this area. With 42 million revenue. EMEA is still doing good. It's very positive growing, but the margin in our EMEA business is still, we earn money, but at the end we drive something like 6-7% EBIT margin. It's primarily two dimension. One is classical system integration, and the rest is DTC services for the rest of the organization. LATAM, same problem as Eastern Europe, maybe even a little bit higher because they have also more fluctuation in the market, currency fluctuation in the market. But it's a growing business. The team is fighting hard to get the utilization high and to get as much as possible out of the market. But we need to turn this business also stronger towards a DTC model so that we use these people in LATAM to deliver for the rest of Europe. Because in Eastern Europe and in LATAM, we have margin erosion compared to the rest of the world. U.S. is a specific task, so you see a very negative growth in this area. This was not planned like this, but it was also clear that this is a risk what we do. We moved from a pure direct model to let's say a very much focused indirect model. So we have now a very solid pipeline for Q3 and Q4. Managing this pipeline from a more direct business, which was a very volatile business, we lived in history from one or two bigger deals in the U.S., which gave us a good or a bad year. And we said, okay, we will change this model towards a much broader partner model. And we have now a good partnership with, for example, companies like Wipro, Deloitte, IBM, and also others like, for example, Ernst & Young and also PwC, which gives us a much broader pipeline. But to move this and to get the first result on order entry, it takes us somewhere between 6 and 9 months. And this was one reason why the order entry in Q1, Q2 was not in line with what we have expected. JPEG is doing well in almost all markets. We started now to sell also transformation business in China. We got the first three deals signed here, and we see a good partnership coming up with different partners, but local partners, but good partnerships are coming up there as well. And then in UK, we had a management change, so we hired somebody from Deloitte, which will join us in 2 weeks, 2 months from now. And I think you all know that UK was very much hit in the first half year by COVID and the Brexit area. So I think this is a mix between a homemade problem ourselves, but also a market problem on the other side. With the new guy, which fits very well to our business, good relationship to the partners we are servicing and SAP, I think we can turn around this hopefully even still in Q4. So if you go to page number 5, the partner business, on the right side, you see 20% of our group revenue comes now through the partner, and 31% of the group order entry comes from partner. We have signed an important add-on with Accenture, Accenture Europe, in the first instance to build up, to do a joint go-to-market for different industries, but also to do a joint delivery send-off. So we will build up something like a digital transformation factory, where we have mixed people between Accenture and S&P to support our customer in an end-to-end view from business consulting down to data consulting and data transformation. This is agreed since a couple of weeks, and we are just implementing the first services for the first big customers. All of the customers are here in Europe because this is a first European initiative driven by a European S&P partner. Then we have a good cooperation with PwC started, which is also we signed the first two deals together with PwC in different industries. That's really good. The partnership with All for One gains really good momentum. We signed in the meantime, I guess, 19 deals together. And these are not only the very small deals, but also customers like, for example, Bitserba and others are following this Conversion 4 factory, which is, I think this is also our partner SAP is impressed what we both achieved here by industrializing the services, using our software to do a highly automated software transformation. And then we had the first RISE projects in LATAM and very open discussion about SAP, how we can support this RISE strategy, RISE with SAP going forward, which is for us important because for sure, at least the smaller customers will follow very much the SAP guidance to move towards the RISE in a one-stop shopping kind of approach. And then, as I said before, we have first partnerships in China with Thinkway and Indonesia with Solitus, Those are important local partners which help us to win business locally in these regions. Page number six. Here you see some of the logo. I think what we do now is the focus is very much not in signing new customers. The focus is much more to enable all partners along their strengths in their specific region, in their specific industry, and to really drive business together, to do joint pipeline development, co-selling, and to improve the order entry on almost all areas. So I would say who is who is here now on our agenda, and the focus is much more on partner enablement and building up the right pipeline. Overall, when we talk about the pipeline, here you see this is the unweighted pipeline overview as of June 2021. And a slightly increased on the partner channel. I think we totally, we did a very good work on in cleaning up the pipeline in the partner area. We had double entries, for example, because we offered one customer engagement with two different partners. So this is now cleared. We have now only one mother opportunity, and then we point towards this mother opportunity with a partner A and a partner B, but so that there's no double count in. But even so, we grow, our pipeline is growing. And if I look to, this is now first half year 2020 compared to first half year 2021. If I look to the next 12 months or four rolling quarter, the partner channel improves significantly, and we see growth rates which are more in the size of 25 to 30%. Direct sales also improved significantly, so from 250 to 280 million. So in total, our pipeline develops great, and we see even more strategic customers are doing, let's say, we talk about this enterprise platform agreement. So what we said before, our aim is very much to sell our software not longer only by project, but to really convince the customer to do an enterprise platform agreement with S&P, so that they decide for the platform, and whatever they do afterwards in terms of S4, move to the cloud, merger or acquisitions, they will use our platform to do to carve out or the merge of data or the cleaning of data, the data quality, and so on. That's part of our strategy going forward. So with that, Heiner, I think I hand over to you for the finance update and the HR update.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, Michael, and also a warm welcome from my side, Heiner Diefenbach here. I would kick off my presentation on slide number 8, the headcount evolution. As you can see, we started with 1,463 employees by end of the fiscal year 2020, and we roughly reduced the numbers of employees, mainly based on our cost efficiency programs in the admin area. And therefore, after the acquisition of data of EXA with 100 and roughly spoken 114 people, we now have 1,576 people on board. I would like now to move over to the financials and move to slide number 10. And as we already started in our fiscal year presentation, we would like to give you more insights on our order entry and revenue by region and segments, also about the cost ratio and the order backlog development. So we will see that in our slide deck later on. The revenue in the first half really developed significantly. We improved our revenue up to 75.7 million, which is 7 million more compared to last year. And the achievement was not only in Q1 we were increasing, but also in Q2. Based on the EXA acquisition, our personal expenses went up, of course. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, the EBITDA is positive in Q2. And after all, in the total half year, also positive with 2.9 million. This has, or the EBIT and net income is also positive in Q2. I think this is quite a good achievement compared to last year. A significant improvement, and therefore the full half year is also better than compared to last year. And we will see all the margin improvements in the comparison to last year also. As I said before, it's pretty much top-line driven on one hand side because we see the revenue increases, but it's also driven by cost discipline, which you can see on our slide number 11, where we started or kicked off a couple of calls in the past to show you much more transparency on our cost side. So you can see that for research and development, we were more efficient on the selling side. Of course, we slightly increased our costs from 10 to 10.7 million for the first half, but I think this is because we would like to grow. And then marketing and general administration, we see good results and more cost savings. So I think this all resulted in a positive EBITDA. And therefore, we expect also sales to grow even in the future because we would like to grow. But the ratios from our point of view are by far better than, let's say, a year ago or so. If we now move on to slide number 12, you can see the segment services. Before I start off with the segment service, overall our revenue in service is roughly spoken 70%. And this is also an improvement in the software arena from 28% first half last year to over 30% in this half year. And I think the first half year anyway in each fiscal year is lower in the area of software. And therefore, we will see a greater portion of software revenue in the second half. The service segment is improved by quarter to quarter and also in the half year in the revenue growth. And this is also reflected in our EBIT figures. I think, as Michael already explained on the slide number five, the revenue and also the order entry, which results out of our partner area is improved. So, for example, in the revenue area, we went up from 15 now to 20%, and in the order entry from 20 to over 30%. And I think this is an outcome of our partner strategy. On slide 13, software segment, I think this is quite impressive because we show double-digit improvements on the revenue for the quarter and for the half year, and also on the EBIT side. I think this is a really good performance. On slide 14, the order entry, as Michael already explained, we can see some improvements better results in the software area and also for the JPEG. I think we will see that on the next slide. And in the service area, because of some large corporations, they are still hesitant to kick off bigger projects. We see the a slightly reduction. Nevertheless, the order backlog went up by almost 30%, up to 132 million. On slide 15, you can see our order entry by region. What is reflected here is what Michael already explained, that the US and the UK are in their performance a little bit behind. But the Central Europe region, from our point of view, is on a high level, pretty much comparable to last year. And all the other regions, especially the JPEG region, they show major improvements. JPEG, of course, on a low level. I think that should be more to come. Slide 16 is one of our standard slides to show how we're going to reconcile our order backlog. And you can see it's improved from 110.8 million, which we reported by the end of the fiscal year, up to 132.8 million, which we are now reporting, of course, and roughly spoken, 5 million is coming from order backlog from the XR, and the others is our order entry for the first half year. Excuse me. So if we now move over to the balance sheet and the balance sheet structure, on the asset side, you can see we still have a high portion of cash in our bank accounts, but please keep in mind, this is really before the acquisition of the DataVard, so we will see there a change in Q3. The contract assets, they increased based on our partner deals and the asset held for sale. This is a result of our decision to sell our Poland entity, which will probably happen by end of September. On the goodwill and intangible assets, this is a reflection of our XR acquisition. On the next slide, page 18, the balance sheet structure on the equity and liabilities, we see an increase of current financial liabilities. This is with the European Investment Bank credit facility, mainly driven by that. We achieved that compared to end of last year. And then again, liabilities held for sale. This is the Poland topic. And then you see the 65 million non-current financial liabilities. This is driven by the first consolidation of XR. I think an important figure is always the equity and the equity ratio. The equity ratio compared to the end of the fiscal year is slightly reduced, down to 36.7%. And but compared to the Q1 is an improvement. Q1 we had 34.8%, so something like 35%. So a small improvement to Q1. I think before I close and hand over to Michael, just a few words about our cash flow statement on slide 19. What you can see here is the change in working capital. This is mainly driven by our partner deals and creates a negative effect on our operating cash flow. The investing cash flow is because of the XR acquisition, and because of the partner deal and the change in working capital, the working capital ratio is increased up to 23%. And that's pretty much roundabout the cash flow statement. Therefore, I would like to hand over to Michael again for the outlook.
Okay, thanks, Reinhard. So let's jump directly to page number 21. So what we do here is we confirm our original outlook, and this is unchanged from an S&P standalone point of view. But we did an update, which you see on the right side, the updated column. Since we did a couple of acquisitions and a couple of or at least one sell-off at the same time, so this on the right side includes now the XRG acquisition, the DataVard acquisition, but also our divestiture of our Polish subsidiary. So if we consider this as well, our group revenue, the range is now between 170 and 190 million, which is 10 million above what we have given as original guidance earlier this year. Both sides will grow, so we grow. Our plan is to grow significantly in revenue on the software side, but also on the service side. Our group EBIT margin stays the same. This is very much caused by an unknown effect, how the purchase price agreement will be, let's say, affect our EBIT result. Therefore, we have decided to introduce a new KPI to you, which we will report starting from now always on each quarter close, which is our EBITDA number. And here you see also a 2 million increase on the bottom line, but also on the top line from 16 to 18 and from 22 to 24 million. And from a group order entry point of view, our guidance was that we will overachieve our year result, last year result, and we will overachieve the 200 million. And I think what I see is today with our result, we are on a good track from an order entry point of view year to date, but also from the pipeline. So this should be totally achievable for us as a company. So I think now I give it back to you, Christoph.
Yes, thank you, Heiner. Thank you, Michael, for the insights into the numbers. And I think, operator, we can now open the Q&A session.
Thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please press 0 and 1 on the telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you've had your question answered before your turn to speak, you can dial 0 and 2 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question is from Johannes Ries, Apus Capital. The line is now open for you.
Yes, good afternoon. Maybe let's start a little bit with some housekeeping question. Can you repeat a little bit more about this margin pressure in LATAM? What is the reason and how you maybe conquer it? And then only for housekeeping, it had been 19 deals with All for One. Did I get this right? Not 19. And how large is the pipeline? Because if I remember the presentations of All for One some months ago, they had already a pipeline of 60 or 70 deals. Ne?
Yep. So let me start with the first one. Yes, it is 19 deals which we signed, and we are either delivered or we are just in delivering the deals. And the mix is, let's say, medium-sized company, so everything above 200, 250 million, but also companies which are ranging, let's say, the lower end of a billion. So we, for example, Bitserva is one customer, Bomark is another customer. There are, let's say, a mix of hidden champions here in the German-speaking area.
And but the pipeline is much bigger. And my last feedback from the All for One management was that the customers more and more got, let's say, constructive. Therefore, they are more willing to sign deals in the recent maybe 2 months or so. Is it a development you also see and will go on maybe in July and August and the rest of the year?
We see this when it comes to new S4 implementation and for big data transformation in All for One, when it comes to this kind of conversion 4, and let's say the renewal of the full package of the outsourcing, moving the customer towards the cloud, upgrade the customer from ECC to S4, and do this in one step. We see still continuous signing. So, but overall, Heiner said this before. Q2 was somehow strange. We had a lot of customer opportunities. You see this in our order entry number, but at the end, the willingness of the customer to bring it finally to a signing to the contract. We also have seen some very strong backwind in May and June. Q3, July was somehow okay, but the big monster deals are missing so far right now. With All for One, I would say All for One finds this model so good that they do now a dedicated sales team only for this conversion 4, which gives them, let's say, a huge opportunity, first of all, to get the customer contracted on a new way to do this, let's say, to sign a new 3 to 5 year contract again with the customer, helps to protect the customer, but also the conversion, this highly automated conversion, is very well accepted by the customer. Yeah.
And maybe any updates to your discussions with SAP in the call with to the acquisition of DataWatt? You mentioned together with the CEO of DataWatt and your future board member, you had another meeting in Waldorf with Mr. Sauer Essig, and you are very optimistic. Step by step, you come closer to, like you mentioned, very important maybe deal with SAP to be really recommended partner for the transformation. Any updates or?
Yeah, but it is not under NDA. Therefore, I would only give you one We have started now a continuous conversation with a clear governance behind, and we have set up two groups, a technical group and a commercial group, to see how a future model in terms of partnership between SAP and S&P can look like. So the rest is under NDA, but this is we are in continuous progress to see how we can accelerate SAP's customer base to move towards S4 and move towards the cloud. Yeah.
And finally, an update on the maybe how you proceed with the hyperscalers with the business is partly also SAP business, but more than this, on the transformation to the cloud in together with this hyperscaler, with whom you make the largest progress, and how this is overall developing.
Yeah, we talk with all of them, but our prime focus is we the Microsoft partnership, which is from a content point of view, from an automated rate, this is the most far developed partnership, let's say technical wise. When it comes to opportunities, Amazon is doing, let's say, a significant amount of deals with us together, and we have a specialized center in Lendata where we have educated the people how to use our software to do the automated software-based transformation towards the cloud. There, Amazon is, we still use, let's say, we do not have an automated deployment and automated business casing, what we have in Microsoft, but we have a service team dedicated in LATAM. And then we are also now in discussion with Google where we go a totally different approach. We have identified six customers where we test now our joint capabilities, how we can play this in front of the customers and how we can, let's say, make this happen together. And then on the other side, our IBM contract, for example, gets very good feedback and echoes very well in the IBM cloud environment. So there are significant amount of serious customer, so IBM technology customers, which are moving, which like to move towards the IBM cloud, and we are supporting this. So IBM agreed, for example, IBM cloud, that they will use our analyze part for almost all customers. They try to move in the cloud, which is a good first start, because if you use our Crystal Bridge for analyzing the current mode of operation, then the probability that the customer will also use our Crystal Bridge to do the move is very high. So overall, this is, let's say, in line with the market expectation. What we see at the end in Microsoft, let me just explain the challenge what we have. When Microsoft is supporting us as the preferred partner, the work in front of the customer is not done by Microsoft, but done by classical system integrator. That means at the end, we need to convince the Atos, the Capgeminis, the IBMs, Accentures, to really use our technology, because a recommendation of Microsoft is the one part. The real, let's say, power is with the system integrator.
Okay. So for the two-step process, in other words. Maybe finally a question to Mr. Diefenbach on the, maybe I didn't got it right, on page number 11, this cost ratios. What is left between maybe all this, functional costs and the revenue, no? Because there's a big gap, no? is the cost calculated after cross margin, or what is? I have problems to understand this. No?
Okay, this is a good point. Maybe we can show a bridge next time. Yeah, of course you are right. It's after the gross margin.
Okay. Maybe this is the missing part there. No?
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay.
So for some research and development is also in the gross margin, in other words.
Yeah, some of it. Yes.
Great. Thanks.
The next question is by Lukas Spann, Eagles Capital GmbH. The line is now open for you.
Yes, hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. My first question is concerning the order intake. After a good start into the year, we now saw a decline in order intake. So in your presentation, I didn't really get the point why Q2 was that weak. And in this context, can you please explain again why the U.S. is developing right now as it is, and what makes you confident that this will change again?
Okay. So the order entry, let me just go to page, where do I find the best kind of order entry here? So when you look to the order entry, our challenge, we had a three-time challenge. The first one was, as I said before, UK and US was very weak. UK is a market challenge and a homemade challenge because we lost by the end of last year. We lost our MD. It is a very, very small unit of 20-25 people. So that means we went to the market. We looked for a new MD, and we have now identified and hired a very good guy from one of our partners, Deloitte, which is already known in the market. So that's the positive part. I think we get this fixed at least in Q4, and the pipeline is already improving. So that's positive. On the US, we hit in history, we had primarily a direct go-to-market with zero partner involvement. And this was something we changed. We invested in a stronger partner management, and we focused very much on building up this partner strategy because we cannot afford enough salespeople ourselves to develop the market. But we lost a little bit of traction on the direct business, and we increased our pipeline significantly in already in Q2 and Q3 and Q4. But as said, we have also seen this in other markets. To move from a direct model to a more indirect model takes you six to 9 months. That means the indirect model did not, deliver the results so far, and the direct model, we took maybe a little bit too much resources out to focus on the indirect side. This was a reason, but when you look to the overall order entry number, last year we had one big deal, which was Eli Lilly. I think this was a 7-8 million deal. This made it the biggest difference. This year we didn't have this deal. So in principle, the pipeline and the forecast for the U.S. is not bad, and we do not have a dramatic situation in the U.S. This was just do we have this one-time big deal with a customer or not? And then we had roughly 6 million slippages in Central Europe, which was all well-committed deals. We did not lose these deals. We get the one is with a customer in Switzerland and a big partner, and the other one is a big automotive OEM here in Germany. Both are committed. Both are agreed with procurement and already committed to us. But now getting this administrated, we thought we get it done in by the end of June, but it didn't happen. And both are not yet signed. So the commitment is here. There's no worry that they are not coming, and this is roughly 6 million. So that's a big difference. Yeah.
And did I get you right that you said to achieve or overachieve 200 million in order entry for the full year?
Yes, we have roughly now. Today we have roughly 100 million signed, and if you take the 40-60 rule, 40% in the first half year, 60% in the second half year, we should at least, from a pipeline point of view, from the prognosis point of view, we will overachieve the 200 million.
Okay. And then on professional services, also if I exclude the 0.7 million for PPA, the EBIT margin in Q2 is not very, very promising. It's a little bit better than in Q1, but you had also more than 5 million in revenues, more than in Q2. So where are you missing margin? So what must happen that you really increase your margin in professional services?
I think it has three dimensions. When we sell off our Polish business delivers today, and Heiner, if you keep me honest, I think they deliver something like 7-8%, maximum 7% EBIT margin, right?
Yeah.
Maximum. So, this is I think, something like 28 million with a margin contribution, which is significantly below what we should expect. The same is in LATAM. LATAM is, I think there was a question before from Mr. Rees. In LATAM, in the history, our LATAM business earned the money very much by selling SAP licenses and SAP maintenance. And this is when you go out to all the SAP partners, this model is changed significantly, because now with the announcement of SAP, that they will move these customers to RISE with SAP. Customers are not buying licenses anymore, and the margin you get, or let's say the contribution from SAP when you move a customer towards RISE is half of what you had before when you move a customer, let's say, when a customer is buying a license from you. So that means the LATAM business needs to be, we need to re-architect the business in LATAM totally, using this team more towards a DTC, the digital transformation center. The experience of the people is great, the quality is high, but the doing business locally in LATAM is if you end up with a break-even business, it's good. And LATAM is very much a service business. So both businesses are hitting us. But then we also had some overcapacity in the rest. We have overcapacity right now, a little bit, something like 15 people in UK and US. We have 5 people in UK, and then we have maybe 25 people in our DTCs in Poland and in LATAM. Overall, when you look now, when you see now how the pipeline develops, how our July result looked like, we improved this, and I would say in the normal transformation area, we can achieve a service business which is for sure in the cost margin area of 35% to 38%, and this is let's say, yeah, we are not far away here. For example, in Central Europe, we get this done. So this is our aim to move towards there. But LATAM and Poland are, let's say, diluting our margin picture here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then in terms of your partner business, do you expect further, partner deals in the area of hyperscalers or in the service business, or not the service business, but with big service companies, or how do you look on the second half of the year?
Yeah, we have a couple of big deals, but not signed by hyperscaler or signed by a partner, but signed for, let's say, with a partner together for an end customer. So we have roughly one of our futures, let's say, main focus area is our enterprise platform agreement, what I had discussed before. And we do this when we reach out to a customer, let's say a big customer here in Europe, we will do this not 100%, but primarily via their partner network. So we do this either with IBM, or we do it with Accenture, or we do this with Deloitte, because this is normally always not only selling a platform to the customer, but offering the customer the industrialized services for this platform as well. And I just went through our sales force this morning. We have already today, we have 25 customer opportunities identified where we can sell off an enterprise platform agreement, hopefully in the next 6 months. And a couple of them. I expect that we can sign 3-4 deals in 2021 still, for enterprise platform agreements. And these are not the small customers. These are the big enterprises, like, for example, Bosch, Siemens, ABB, Daimler, BMW, Schneider Electric, you name it.
And how long do the contracts take along?
Normally, the contract duration is normally between 3 and 5 years. And then we have three different ways how the customer can consume it. E.ON, for example, bought such a license, but they bought it. So this was a traditional, let's say, software selling. So they bought the software, and now they pay maintenance to us. But we also have a subscription kind of model. And then for one of the customers where we are just in negotiation, we offer an on-demand model. This customer is paying, for example, for using the customer buys the right to do all analysis with our platform, and therefore he pays, for example, let me just give you an example, $1 million per year for this right to use the software to analyze his environment. And then he has an on-demand model, so he can consume either a transformation for S4, a transformation in the cloud, a combination of both, or a merger or a carve out. this is our on-demand model. So buying the software, go for a subscription kind of model or an on-demand model is the way how you can consume the software.
Okay. Good. Thanks for the answer.
You're welcome.
Our next question is by Wolfgang Specht at Berenberg. The line is now open for you.
Yes, hello, good afternoon. Three additional ones from my side. The first one on AXA. Can you give us an idea where you book the revenues of AXA? Is it on one side of your segments, or is there a split between services and software? The second one on the targeted sale of your Polish business. Can you give us an idea if they have a Q4 tiered business or is it equally split over the year? So what can we expect from the revenue effect once the Polish business is missing, likely for the fourth quarter? The final one is on the order entry. Do I understand you right with the contract negotiations you're mentioning? You're still expecting this double-digit euro million order for the second half of 2021.
Heiner, would you like to start?
Yeah, I can start. So I guess you mean the acquisition of AXA. It's not AXA, it's AXA.
AXA, AXA.
Yeah, we have booked 2.5 million revenue in the service segment for the AXA in Q2. I guess this answers your question. So
okay,
it's in...
Yeah.
In, yeah. Mm? Okay, and I think the other one was about Poland.
Yeah, what should we expect once they're missing for the fourth quarter? Has this any significant influence on the full year reporting, or is it neglectable?
No, the Polish business is running, roughly spoken, above 20 million of revenue, and it's slightly profitable. So it depends if we're going to close the deal by the end of September. So then we expect, roughly spoken, something between 6 and 7 million euro revenue effect on Q4.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the last question was about the software order entry. If we still expect a double digital order entry for software in the second half year, right?
Right.
The answer is yes, for sure. So
okay.
in the software business, in the software business, you have in a classical software business, you do sometimes 70% of the revenue or the order entry in Q4. We are not on this ratio because we are project-based software, more project-based software. So, but our order entry in the history in the last 2 years was always something like 40-60, 40% in the first half year, 60% in the second half year.
Okay, thanks a lot.
The next question is by Bernd Laux, Black Wall Capital. The line is now open for you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. The first question is on AXA again. It appears you have acquired the business at favorable terms, but now you're writing about the opportunity to create synergies. Maybe you could explain to us in more detail where these synergies lie, given that AXA is a slightly different type of business compared to your data transformation core business. And the second question is, on the two new partnership, or the one new partnership, PwC, and the expansion of the Accenture partnership, maybe you could explain a little more what you expect in terms of business over what time frame from such partnerships. Thank you very much.
Okay, Heiner,
okay.
Would you like to start with AXA?
Yeah, I can start with the AXA synergies. Of course, what the acquisition of AXA is pretty much based on the assumption that we have the same approach as the go-to-market. Yeah, indirect is pretty much in favor, and that they try to acquire their business through the finance organization, the CFOs, in big and complex companies. So therefore, it's kind of an overlapping. And from our point of view, we believe we can give them good back office support. So this should reduce, of course, our back office costs, our admin costs, and create more efficiency around about that. And then EXA has also a big number of employees in India. Over 100 people are working there, and we're going to use them either for internal IT support, for example, and also in our projects. And I guess round about the go-to-market and the sales strategy, maybe Michael can also add some more ideas round about where we expect to accelerate the XR.
Okay, yeah. Let me just stress, for example, your question about the partnership with PwC. This partnership is for S&P, but also for XR. So PwC, you know, this consulting unit, we are talking here very much, let's say, on the consulting side when we talk about S&P, but we also talk about the auditing side when we talk about the XR solution. So let me just start with the XR part. PwC, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, and KPMG. But KPMG is not yet a partner, let's say, at least not an important partner right now for us. But the other three are doing significantly business with us. And also, for example, we are in discussion with Howard and Partner, but more for the extra part. When you do the auditing, the operational transfer pricing is more and more a key topic for them. How do you do this in terms of being tax compliant and doing this, let's say, in the best automated and transparent way? And therefore, EXA offers a very great solution. So this is sold on both sides, or on the one side through the auditors, but also through the consulting unit. So there's a huge synergy because we have both the same partner, we have the similar buying center, and we can combine our strengths here in one joint go to market. That's one part. The other part is when it comes, for example, what we have seen is when we do a big S4 transformation or we implement, let's say, we go through the data transformation part, we can consult also the CIO and the chief digital officer regarding the XR solution. So we have direct access to the customer, and very often in most cases where we do big S4 transformation, the CFO is directly involved in the governance together with us. So that means there is a huge upsell and cross-sell for EXA as well. So what do we do with PwC and with Accenture? Accenture is the number one head-on-head with Deloitte on the S4 transformation area. So, and the good thing is that we talk here with the head of SAP for Europe. He's very much committed to do this. Let's say he names our business that we support his business and help him to transform his business from a pure consulting business towards a more asset-based consulting business. So that means I personally believe that the Accentures of the world, the system integrator of the world, also recognize that the future may not belong to the labor arbitrage, to the pure labor arbitrage business anymore, but to a more software-based, asset-based kind of transformation. And To get this set up and scale, let's say, in a good way, we have agreed that we will also industrialize the services so that we bring different people from both sides together to one center, and we deliver then customers like, for example, yeah, big automotive supplier or big manufacturing companies to deliver the services out of this factory. That's also good for us because with this borrowed authority of a big player like Accenture, we can enter customers where we as a small S&P are highly under competition, sometimes with SAP or sometimes from other let's say system integrator, and they beat us just because of the size of the company. This can be, let's say, eliminated or neutralized by this kind of go to market. PwC is more front end consultants, but they also move more and more towards implementation. They have less people in India, therefore they need to differentiate better. compared to their competition, and therefore they use us to let's say just to get the services done. PVC, for example, we will deliver the services more or less ourselves, and they just take our service and our software and ask us to deliver the service end to end under their control. So they do the PMO, they do the process consulting, they do all the process matching and this kind of things, the classical process implementation, but we do then as an end-to-end project for them, and they are general contractor and we are doing just the subcontracting to PwC. It's slightly different, but both are very interesting for us. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question is by Johannes Ries, Aptus Capital.
Yes, only a follow-on question. You mentioned this platform deals, the 25 you have identified and the 3 to 4 you expect maybe to close with different models. Here you explained 3 different models. But only to give us a feeling about the potential size of such a deal with a large company, a platform deal, because that's equalized a little bit with the 3 models, what could be the lifetime value of such a deal? Only to have a feeling.
Yeah, between 3 and 25 million.
Super. And that's but that's a mix between software and services.
No, it's only software.
Only software. Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah.
Super. And you expect maybe it's a chance to close 3 or 4 if everything goes right, yes.
Yeah.
Super, thanks.
As a reminder, if you want to ask a question, please press 0 and 1. There are no further questions for the moment, and so I hand back to the host, Mr. Marx.
Yes, thank you, Operator Sheng. Thank you, everybody, for your time and your interest in this call. As you can see in our financial calendar, the next regular publication is our Q3 results end of October. If you, in the meantime, have any further questions on anything, just refer to Investor Relations, and we take care of whatever questions might occur. So I think that concludes today's call. Have a nice rest of the day and goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.